Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac DeVere.
So should the president fire Jeff Sessions?
I will leave to the president, who should be on his cabinet. I am deeply concerned that the attorney general has become an employee at the Justice Department and is not truly leading that agency.
That sounds like a yes.
I still think there's time for Jeff Sessions to do the right thing, which is why I'm reticent to say yes. I think that Jeff Sessions...
But the right thing here would be to call in Bob Mueller and say that's it.
Well, to call in Bob Mueller and say, where are we? Is there evidence of collusion that justifies a continuation of the investigation? If there is, I think that 14 months into the Trump presidency, we should know it. And if there's not, then let's go ahead and wrap this thing up.
Well, he's recused himself, so he wouldn't be the one to do that, right? But it would be Rod Rosenstein who would do that, right?
I believe that recusal is not required under the law, and I believe it could be rescinded.
Today's guest, Matt Gaetz, the freshman Florida Republican congressman who's turned himself into a media phenomenon in Washington by embracing pretty much everything President Trump has said about the Russia investigation and saying yes to pretty much every interview request that's come in to talk about it. Usually, I'm not eager to spend time here on the podcast with people that are showing up everywhere else. The point is to bring you voices and conversations you're probably not getting plastered all over cable and the Sunday shows and quoted in every article you read. Well, Gaetz is a voice you've heard if you've been paying attention. But I think this conversation is different, because a different thing happens when you spend a little more than 30 seconds talking about these questions. And that's what we did. We've been trying to schedule this podcast for a while with Gaetz. The complicated thing about scheduling an interview with him, I discovered, is that he's busy with so many other interviews. He knows, on the one hand, it's ridiculous. Back in January, I tweeted a shot of the National Enquirer that had a Trump story, which quoted him inside, and he tweeted back at me, "Mom will be so proud." But he also knows that this has all put him on the map and gotten the President of the United States to know who he is. Again, he is a 35-year-old freshman congressman who is this much of a factor. After the microphones were off, we were talking about the thing that was in the news all over the place at that moment. "It's all ratings," he said. "I take it for what it is," he told me. "It's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's a condition." So we talked about that too. The weird, only in today's Washington tale, where a 35-year-old first-term congressman can decide he's fully assessed intelligence he hasn't seen and become a star by always being willing to talk about it. It's a weird one. Remember to follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at Isaac DeVere, and email me your thoughts at isaac@politico.com. And subscribe on Apple Podcasts or however you're listening so you don't miss any of the great episodes coming up. Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello, Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs, Seth Meyers. Our rocking 2018 is just getting started. And now, my conversation with Congressman Matt Gaetz.
So your father was in politics, your grandfather was in politics. It seems like there are two pathways that children of politicians take. Either they can't get away from it, or they can't imagine being anywhere near it. Were you ever in the "I'm not going to be anywhere near politics" camp?
Yeah, there was a time when I was working as an intern in the Florida State Capitol when I thought that it really would be fun to be behind the scenes, maybe one day someone who could serve on a staff.
But still in politics.
Yeah, still around it, but not in elected office. I saw, you know, the dark side of campaigning, that you get drug into every facet of your life, and that, you know, any mistake you've made is something that then gets amplified during the course of a vibrant democracy. Those are the rules of the game. And so I thought I'd be more likely to be a behind the scenes person. And then I realized that they will let anyone do this job that wins the election.
That is the way democracy works.
It truly is. I mean, you know, there are many who believe that these are resume contests. In a way, it's sort of the direct opposite of a resume contest. It's whoever wins the election gets to have the greatest impact on outcomes. And when I was 26 years old, a state legislative seat had come open in my district, and I decided to be a candidate for it.
How did your family end up in Florida?
My dad he was working in a Green Bay hospital, and he had the idea to come to Florida and to try to work to build a hospice network. So many people at the end of life come to Florida. We're sort of God's waiting room. And it was an interesting
the weather's
market.
Good.
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting market for the hospice business. So as a young man, he went there to start that business, and he met a pharmacist, my mother, and they got married, and they have been married ever since, for now 36 years.
But then he gets into politics, not into the hospice business.
Well, he sold his hospice business, and then my mother wanted to return to her home in Northwest Florida, and my dad was just a really great dad. He was involved in the things my sister and I were involved in, from athletics to scouting, and he got on the PTA and then was elected to the school board. After serving on the school board, he felt like he could manage the school district by bringing business practices into the educational setting. And after being the first non-educator elected school superintendent in my county, he brought us from about in the middle of the pack academically to the top performing school district 4 years in a row. He was elected to the state senate after that, and then subsequently served as president of the state senate.
You're a year plus into the job. Is being in Washington what you thought it would be?
No.
Why not?
Because of the tragically slow pace and the inability to engage in dynamic reform across a variety of spectrums. We have, you know, 535 people that each could be using their individual talents and could be working together to solve a wide range of problems.
So why do you think that is?
I don't know. I'm new to this, but I'm very disappointed by it. And I don't think it's necessary.
It seems like that's a thing people complain about. And then every time that I've asked people about this, and a couple months ago, I was asking a bunch of retiring members what they thought that could be done to fix things in Washington. And they said they didn't know, or maybe it would change at some point.
Well,
everybody complains, but nobody actually is able to say, okay, this is what to do.
Sure. I would propose two concepts. First, term limits. I think that if members of Congress had a shot clock, if you knew that there was a definite period of time where you would have to move on from this job, it would drive more consensus around issues, because you might only have one or two chances to ever impact a policy area you care about. And also, I just think that the churn of people would create a different type of dynamic environment, rather than a circumstance where two people who may have been here a decade hold a grudge for another decade, rather than continuing to have a new flow of ideas and personalities.
Some of the retiring members that I talked to a couple months ago said that the problem is that there are too many new people here and people don't know each other, and that's why things don't get done.
Yeah, I don't know that the American people would agree with that assessment, and I certainly don't, because I've served in both systems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, to be the committee chair or ranking member, you got to be usually 20 years at least around. But where does that are you going to impose term limits on yourself?
I don't think I should unilaterally disarm my district by pre-announcing how long I'd like to be here. I have in my own mind how long I'd like to serve in the Congress.
So you have a number of terms that it'll be?
I have an amount of time that I'd like to be here. But I think that if you pre-state that, then you you disarm the capability of your district.
Is it over 10 years?
I'm not going to answer that question, Isaac, but you're in the neighborhood.
All right. So the thing that you have become associated most with in the last couple months is your opinions on the Russia investigations going on.
Well, you've obviously not read my cannabis reform legislation.
Well, we're going to talk about that too. Okay. But you are a pretty constant presence in the media about what you think is going on. So what do you think it really comes down to? What happened in the 2016 election?
In the 2016 election, I believe that Vladimir Putin absolutely did not want Hillary Clinton to become president. And I believe that he held those views because when she was Secretary of State, she was one of the loudest voices in the world calling for an uprising against the Putin government. I believe that he would have had the predilection to oppose her candidacy regardless of who the Republican nominee was. I think that's one of the reasons why it appears that these Russian troll farms were trying to help Bernie Sanders or Jill Stein. I believe there was an anti-Hillary bias.
I mean, that's what we see in the indictment of the 13 Russians.
Sure.
That's the argument, at least in that part of the Mueller investigation that we know.
I believe,
right?
That's
which is that they were going after, or they were moving in support of anybody that would hurt Hillary Clinton. Right.
I agree with that assessment, and I think it's well evidenced. I also believe the Trump campaign was lurching from one event to the next. I had some familiarity with the campaign. I spoke at, I think, four of the Trump rallies that were in Florida, and you know, these were not highly coordinated events, Isaac. I would often learn of the program of one of these events just a day or so before the event itself.
It seems like a lot of advance notice given some of what was going on in the campaign.
And,
right?
But that seems to evidence the point that these were not people off colluding with Russia. Also, in 14 months, there's been no evidence of collusion with the Russian Federation. I do believe that there are those in the media and on the political left who want to use this issue to try to distract the president. And I also think that there was foreign influence on the other side of the campaign.
Do you think that we were attacked as a country?
Yes. And I believe that Russia systematically attacks democracies all around the world with these tactics and others.
But if you think that we were attacked, do you think that the response has been commensurate with that?
I think we need to do more. I am working now to ensure that we get better intelligence sharing with supervisors of elections and secretaries of state that have to defend the integrity of the ballot box. I don't believe that any of the Russian efforts impacted the outcome of the election. Just because Russia cares about impacting an outcome doesn't mean that they're effective at doing so, but we should harden our defenses to be prepared.
They didn't, from what we've seen so far, there's nothing that says that the integrity of the voting system was compromised, even though
correct.
We have seen that there were clearly attempts. But there does seem to be clear evidence that there was success in riling people up and causing more anger and division, right?
Isaac, it was the 2016 election. I think there was sufficient anger and division in the absence of 100 Russian trolls.
It was more than 100 Russian trolls.
Well,
right?
that's what was laid out. I mean, look, you're talking about a political industrial complex in a presidential election in the year 2016 that was spending $1 billion. And so I think that, you know, Russia's efforts would be like emptying a thimble full of vinegar into the ocean, hoping to change its chemical composition.
I guess, but wait, so you said it was an attack, but you just feel like it was an irrelevant attack.
I think it was. I don't think it's irrelevant. I always think it's relevant when there's a foreign entity attempting to influence democracy anywhere in the world, much less here in the United States.
So, I mean, the feeling that you hear expressed from people who are more concerned about what happened is often that the president has downplayed this so much and is not taking seriously enough what happened here, and that is making other people not take it seriously enough. But so I'm curious how you thread that.
Yeah, I would reject that criticism. I think that the president could never say enough to satisfy some in the mainstream media and some on the political left as it relates to Russia.
But he hasn't said anything about that. Right, like he's only said it's not true. He's never said that there is anything true to what was going on, because he's focused on the fact that there's no collusion that's been evidenced at all, right?
Clearly that's the president's focus. And I can't speak for his views on whether or not Russia attacked us or didn't. I could tell you, based on the intelligence that I've reviewed, based on the meetings I've had with intelligence officials all over the world in my own travels, I believe that Russia engages in this activity as a global strategy.
How's your own interplay with President Trump work? You've talked about how he calls you sometimes after you're on TV. So what's that like?
That's typically how it works.
On your cell phone?
Yeah.
And it's just, hey, Matt, it's the president. What is it? What's that conversation?
Well, you know, he's always very funny and very laudatory. And, you know, he's one of the great showmen of a political generation. And so I think that, you know, there's a certain element of the president that, you know, wants to confer onto others some of his skills.
So what does that mean in practice and your conversation?
I think he said one time that I should smile more when he thought, you know, I wasn't smiling enough, and told me he liked my new haircut, things like that.
So he's coaching you along in the does he talk to you about the substance of what you're saying?
We typically don't discuss the substance of the Russian, not typically. I don't know that we've ever discussed the substance of the investigation. You know, it's more about the president wanting to keep his finger on the pulse of the Congress, where we stand, what people are discussing. I think he has very good instincts, and I think that he informs those instincts with discussions that he has with people outside of maybe the traditional sense. I don't think a lot of presidents were calling backbencher first-term members of Congress, you know, throughout our nation's history. I think he does it as a sort of his broader strategy to always have a sense of what's going on. I've had the president call me late at night and early in the morning. President Trump keeps...
So what is it? Is it come up on your phone as Donald Trump, or what is it?
So it's interesting. There's variety there, Isaac. Sometimes it will be some version of an unknown number, but I have and then you'll wait and someone will come on and say, you know, please hold for the president. I've had other circumstances where it's just a 10-digit number that starts with a 202 area code, and I will pick it up and it will just be President Trump with no connection whatsoever.
Have you tried to call that back?
I have not, no.
Can be texting with the president, I guess.
Yeah, I always figure he just, like, you know, took Jared's phone for a minute or something.
When the Nunes memo came out, you were one of the people who was pumping it up the most. And let me just read something that you said about it, your assessment of what it had in there. You said, this is a wanton miscarriage of justice and the stuff of tin pot dictatorships and banana republics, not the United States of America. That's a big claim.
Yeah, I think that cash at the Democratic National Committee was converted into a government-sponsored warrant to spy on American citizens. That is outrageous. That should not be accepted.
It was one citizen that was in there, right? You said citizens.
Sure.
Right. So it was Carter Page,
you don't know that, Isaac. Actually,
no, I mean, but what was in the Nunes memo? Right.
But the surveillance of Mr. Page likely led to the intelligence gathering from others. When you are surveilling the content of someone's communications, they are communicating with others. So there are others that have their rights.
Sure. We did one of these with Michael Hayden a little while back, the former CIA director, and he said his problem with the Nunes memo was that you guys revealed that there was an American citizen under surveillance, that was sort of violating Carter Page's rights, and that's where the issue was, that the government is surveilling people all the time, essentially.
Yeah, how frightening.
Is anything that we've now gotten the Democratic memo out, there's more information that's come through, has anything changed your thoughts on what happened?
No, nothing has changed my view that there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, and also nothing has changed my mind that what occurred with the FBI and the Department of Justice in the acquisition of this FISA warrant was totally out of bounds and deserving of the appointment of a second special counsel, and I believe potentially criminal charges.
But have you seen all the intelligence?
All the intelligence gathered from the FISA.
That led to the warrant being issued.
Well, that's why the Nunes memo is so important. It lays out what functioned as the bases and not the bases for that particular memo.
But Chairman Nunes did not know, he didn't see all of the underlying intelligence, right? And
they've seen the FISA application to the court is necessarily inclusive of all the information. The FISA process requires that, particularly on the renewals. On the renewals, there is a demand in the law that any of the information that is gathered that is pertinent to the issues that underpin the basis for the memo be included in subsequent renewals. Chairman Nunes has seen all of that information. The members of the Intelligence Committee have seen
it. But he hadn't seen the full spectrum of the intelligence involved, right? That was
part of the issue. But all the relevant intelligence, all the relevant intelligence as to this FISA question was included within the application to the court. That has been reviewed by the Intelligence Committee.
So how is it that you think that he and Adam Schiff ended up with such a different conclusion about what happened here?
I don't know. I think that, it is unfortunate that the Intelligence Committee has been so politicized. I agree with the comments of my colleague from Florida, Tom Rooney, when he said that this is so aberrational for the Intelligence Committee that usually holds as a hallmark its bipartisanship and its secrecy and its ability to conduct investigations. We seem to, in the words of Representative Rooney, gone off the rails.
Do you think Obama wiretapped Donald Trump?
I believe the Obama administration did.
Him directly?
I think we've still got to pull the thread on that sweater. But what I've seen to date is that the administration most certainly was engaged in surveillance that was alleged by the president when he was mocked.
How would you pull the thread on that?
I think we've got to interview more witnesses. One of my frustrations is that the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight and Government Reform Committee announced a very ambitious investigation to interview 20 witnesses. And in 2.5 months, we've interviewed two of them. And subsequent to both of their interviews, they've left the employment of the federal government. So it would seem to me that that would prod the committee leadership to enhance the pace of that investigation. And it is frustrating to me that it's been so slow. But as I shared with you, that's one of my great frustrations with the Congress.
But I guess the question ends up being, you feel like more than enough has been done to look into President Trump, but not nearly enough has been done to look into what Barack Obama did here.
Correct. There's been a 14-month investigation of President Trump and collusion. Well, there are.
I mean, we know how Carter Page surveillance would have been surveillance that was approved under the Obama administration.
No one takes the position that these are totally separate endeavors. I would concede that there's a nucleus of some common fact that requires review and analysis. And I wish we were doing that at a more rapid pace.
The thing that I hear from intelligence professionals and legal professionals looking at this is a fear that all of this is just undermining the credibility of the FBI, of our intelligence agencies, in a way that is dangerous. And by all of this, I mean the fighting that's going on within Congress.
I think colleagues on both sides of the aisle have acknowledged the vast majority of people who serve in the FBI are patriots. They serve all over the world, and they do things that most Americans will never know to keep us safe, and we're grateful for it. But if the senior leadership at the FBI was engaged in improper conduct, then that should be criticized. Those folks should be held to account.
Who would that be?
I think that Andrew McCabe was infected by politics in some of the decisions he made. Based on the emails he sent, depriving the Washington field office of jurisdiction over the Hillary Clinton email investigation, and then seizing control of that at the head shed, all the while you had portions of the Comey exoneration statement being in kind of a state of constant edit among this group of people that then were shown to have manifested bias against President Trump.
Were you happy in October of 2016 when Comey reopened the investigation into the Hillary Clinton emails?
I don't recall being happy. I recall campaigning for the current office I hold. I remember knocking on a lot of doors and making a lot of phone calls. So I don't remember it as a time of great glee.
President Trump was pretty excited when that happened. And I think that that's one of the things that's been a little whiplash-inducing about this, is that at one point Jim Comey was the hero, and then he was the enemy, and then he was the hero, and then...
For all sides, though, right?
Yes.
I mean, like the whiplash of that is something that would sort of overwhelm Republicans or Democrats looking at it. I mean, you had Democrats that were wanting to crucify Comey who now want to canonize him.
Right.
And perhaps vice versa on the Republican side.
Well, I mean, it's one of the strange things that's happened here. It's what people seem to think, that he's great when he does things that agree with your politics. But I think that what he did was caught up with whatever Andrew McCabe was doing now.
Yeah, I think that they were working in concert in some circumstances. You know, sometimes there's more of the iceberg under the water than above it. The emails that I reference where McCabe is involved in the jurisdictional decisions of who's going to conduct the investigation occurred well before that. And those weren't in October.
Yeah.
Those were earlier in the summer.
So it's Andrew McCabe here.
Bruce Orr, I would say, is another individual who has a lot of explaining to do. This is a guy who had a counter-narcotics, anti-drug portfolio at Justice. All of a sudden, his wife gets hired by Fusion GPS with money partially provided by the Democratic National Committee. And then you have Bruce Orr valeting this dossier into the intelligence bloodstream. It strikes me as a real break of procedure that invites the infection of politics into the intelligence process.
You believe that? I mean, these are things that are putting together a lot of threads, right?
Oh, I think that the evidence is very strong that Orr had no counterintelligence portfolio when he was engaged in the drug enforcement work. And then all of a sudden, his movement to that space coincides with the hiring of his wife. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Orr never discloses this spousal employment that seems to have a direct nexus to some of the facts that he ends up working on as an agent of our government. That is really troubling to me. When you have these facts before you on where the cash moves, who it moves to, and then the subsequent downstream effects within our government, it's pretty easy to see that we were vulnerable to politicization.
Do you think that McCabe and Orr changed the outcome of the election?
No.
Was it more significant than what the Russians did?
I think that as Americans, we always should judge the conduct of our government to a far higher standard than the Russian government.
Okay, but in terms of like the effect that it had on things?
I don't believe either impacted the outcome of the election. It's binary. I don't think it's like matter of degree.
Then the question becomes, well, what do you do about Bob Mueller? Do you think the president should fire him?
No, I think the attorney general should conclude the investigation. I think the attorney general should call Mr. Mueller to provide the evidence he has. If there's evidence of collusion, let's see it. I don't think anyone should be closed-minded. If there is evidence, we would all want to know what that evidence is. But if this is going to be a never-ending, limitless investigation into every real estate transaction of the Trump organization years before Donald Trump even contemplated running for president, I think it will unnecessarily distract the country from the important work that we have to do.
But the indictments that have come out so far and the plea deals that have come out so far, none of those strike you as significant enough to justify Mueller continuing the work?
No, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone, and I don't think it's an actionable item to indict the 13 Russians associated with this troll farm. I think that the U.S. judicial process is not the appropriate way to deal with an intelligence attack.
But what about the National Security Advisor lying to the FBI?
Well, look, I was deeply troubled by that. I was glad the president fired Mike Flynn for lying to the vice president. I think there were times when Mr. Flynn got out in front of his skis, and if he lied to the FBI, yeah, he should be.
Well, I mean, he pled guilty to it, yeah. Right? So, but that was part of the Mueller probe too,
right?
So that's why I'm asking.
Right, but it still has nothing to do with collusion, right? I mean, my point is, Mueller was assigned to do this job to investigate collusion. That was his charge, was to deal with whether or not there was collusion with the Trump campaign that improperly would have allowed the Russian government to have some influence on our government. Mike Flynn being, making poor choices and lying to the FBI seems so far beyond that it risks mission creep.
Well, I guess the argument would be that he lied to the FBI about his contact with the Russians and he was a Trump campaign official, and that's how it relates, maybe not in so far providing evidence of collusion, but it relates to this question of what was going on between Trump campaign officials and perhaps with more knowledge from other people in the campaign and perhaps just Michael Flynn on his own, right?
But look how long it's been since Flynn even made that plea deal, right? If there was some great reveal,
it's been 4 months, right?
Yeah, like, let's assume that Mike Flynn has, a video recording of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin memorializing their agreement to collude to influence the outcome of this election. Why in the world would you sit on that for 4 months? Why would you not help us prepare the country if that in fact is the case? I think what you have here is a desire to squeeze witnesses. I think obviously a big element for Flynn is the future for his son, who was likely involved in many of the activities that Flynn was involved in just as a consequence of staffing him. And that may be, where the pressure point is that Mr. Mueller's found.
So should the president fire Jeff Sessions?
I will leave to the president, who should be on his cabinet. I am deeply concerned that the attorney general has become an employee at the Justice Department and is not truly leading that agency.
That sounds like a yes. It sounds like you would not shed a tear if Jeff Sessions were removed from the Justice Department.
I still think there's time for Jeff Sessions to do the right thing, which is why I'm reticent to say yes. I think that Jeff Sessions...
But the right thing here would be to call in Bob Mueller and say that's it.
Well, to call in Bob Mueller and say, where are we? Is there evidence of collusion that justifies a continuation of the investigation? If there is, I think that 14 months into the Trump presidency, we should know it. And if there's not, then let's go ahead and wrap this thing up.
Well, he's recused himself, so he wouldn't be the one to do that, right? But it would be Rod Rosenstein who would do that, right?
I believe that recusal is not required under the law, and I believe it could be rescinded.
Do we know that the conversation that you wish would happen hasn't happened already? Like, there's no reason to believe that they haven't talked, that Rosenstein hasn't talked with Mueller about what's going on, right?
I believe Mr. Rosenstein and Mr. Mueller are very close. And the reason I believe that is because Mr. Rosenstein wanted Bob Mueller to be the head of the FBI after James Comey was fired. He walked Mueller into the president's, into the Oval for an interview. I guess I don't know if it was the Oval, but he walks Mueller in, recommends Mueller for the job. It becomes clear that the president is not going to hire Mueller for the job. And within 24 hours, Rosenstein has appointed Mueller to investigate the president.
So you think he should be fired?
Again, I'm not going to give the White House HR advice. I'll leave that to them. But look, I think that Mr. Rosenstein's got a lot of explaining to do as it relates to his signatures on these FISA renewals that don't disclose the political origin of this dossier to a secret FISA court in a non-adversarial process.
But from what we've seen since, it does seem like the political origins of the Steele dossier were part of it, right?
No, that's not true. There's a footnote that talks about U.S. person one. Mm-hmm. That's Glenn Simpson. There's no mention of Christopher Steele, who is the author of the dossier, and his political bias. And he's not a U.S. person.
He's not. No,
right.
He's
so there is no reference to Christopher Steele's political bias to
his political bias as a British citizen?
No, it's his political bias as someone who hates Donald Trump, who's using this dossier as a business development platform, selling off access to it to the DNC, the Clinton campaign, Russians.
But do we know that he hates Donald Trump?
Christopher Steele? We know that as a consequence of testimony before the substantive committees.
That he just hates Donald Trump and that's
that he thing. Was that he I believe that it was I'm paraphrasing here, but that he was passionate about Trump not becoming president.
Mm-hmm. And you feel I mean, I've gotten Oppo research before. You've been around campaigns for long enough between you and your father and other people to know that Oppo research happens. Everybody has an agenda.
Yeah, it's typically not used as a government-sponsored warrant to go spy on Americans.
Well, but it was part of other information that was provided,
I'm
right?
I'm a litigator by trade. You always lead with your best evidence. This was the leading piece of evidence. McCabe testifies that but for this dossier, there is no warrant. And it was the house upon which this entire Russia narrative was built, mm-hmm. and it's a lie.
What I think strikes some people in thinking about this is that there are different versions of what happened here that can all seem like they're based in like threads and conspiracy theories and other stuff. And that doesn't mean obviously the president himself believes that the collusion suggestion here is one of those conspiracy theories. Is there ever a point where you wonder about that from the things that you believe here? You've got, we've run through a bunch of stuff here that is, I think if they were, it was in a John le Carré novel, people would say, okay, it's a little much, right? But it all strikes you as like there's no question that this stuff happened. Rod Rosenstein was running a game, that Christopher Steele was doing this all to get Carter Page investigated. It's a lot.
Yeah, this is one hell of a swamp.
It's a swamp that's across the oceans and.
Yeah, I mean, look, I take no joy in the fact that these things have happened in our country. I think we should do a lot to prevent these things from happening in the future. I'm disappointed that there's been such a lack of bipartisanship in trying to clean up the systems, because you're right, it is a lot. But it's my belief these things have happened. I think that if you trace the evidence and the statements that have been provided from witnesses, you had improper conduct on the part of the Justice Department and the FBI. And that there were people there working to undermine this president both before and after his election.
You mentioned your work on cannabis, which is another issue you have with Jeff Sessions. He has a very different opinion of things than you do.
Yeah.
So what do you think the federal government should be doing here?
Well, the federal government's been lying to the American people about cannabis for a generation. And we need to first stop doing that. Second, we need to unlock the potential cures that cannabis could provide, the palliative care, the relief that it could provide people by allowing research to happen and by removing cannabis from the list of Schedule I narcotics. Right now, the federal government takes the position that there can be no medical application of cannabis. That is a lie. And we have far too many people that are part of the baby boomer generation that serve in the Congress that have recalcitrant opposition to cannabis reform. And it is so unfortunate that my party would play a role in putting the government between people who are suffering and something that could help them.
Have you made that case to President Trump?
I have discussed the issue with him.
What does he say?
The president campaigned on medical marijuana, and I think he wants to honor that commitment. I think it's no surprise that some of the dialogue between Justice and the White House is strained.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Right? And
he's called the attorney general disgraceful on Twitter, right?
I think it was beleaguered.
Well, I think it's both, actually.
Yeah, I wasn't saying or. I was saying perhaps and. But I think it's a strained relationship. And I think that has created an environment where the attorney general has had a longer leash to impose his bad views.
This is something that he believed in a long time ago, right? Before he was AG. Is there any real chance for change on the federal level?
Oh, it's certain. It's just a matter of how long, and it's a matter of how many people have to die needlessly painful deaths in the interim. But this is not an issue that we're going to have to fight for another 10 or 20 years. The people who believe in cannabis reform are going to win because the American people are so strongly with us. We just got to get a few, gray-haired politicians out of the way.
The other thing that you have opposed some members of your party on is climate change. You're part of the Climate Solutions Caucus now. Do you believe in global warming?
Of course. The Earth is warming, and I didn't come to Congress to argue with a thermometer.
Is it man-made?
I think humans play a substantial role in the impact on the environment. I do think there's work to do to ascertain to what extent all climate change is man-made, and then what is direct, man-induced climate change, and what are some of the downstream effects from deforestation and other things. But yeah, we definitely play a role in how warm the earth is, and I think that we should embrace an ecosystem of innovation rather than regulation. I mean, I'm not a person that believes in like carbon taxes or those things because I don't think the world will model them. I think we have a long history that shows that.
It's happening in other parts of the world, though.
Well, I mean, not in the areas where you see the greatest amount of emissions, right? I mean, in China and India, I don't think you have I think that there may be on paper goals on emission standards, but in practice, I think you still see a tremendous amount of the world's emissions coming from China and India.
Why are so many members of your party not of the same view as you are about climate change existing and about it being at least a man-made contribution to it, if not man-made?
I don't know.
The president doesn't seem to believe in climate change, or at least in man-made climate change.
I think the president's made inconsistent statements on climate change. I think at times he calls it a hoax.
Yeah, he's called it a Chinese hoax. Right?
And there are times when he said that, you know, if we could get a good deal, he would want to re-enter the Paris Agreement so that we could have a better voice with the world on the issue.
Well, but that's what he said about the deal. What he said about climate change has been pretty consistent, right?
That it's no, I think there are times where the president has said he believes that climate change is a reality.
You're from Florida. There's reason for you to be pretty worried about climate change. If the oceans rise, it'll change what life is like in Florida by a lot. So it's an existential thing. Do you make that case to your fellow members, to the president?
I instead make the case that we should not be a party that is opposed to science. I don't think this is a parochial issue for me as a Floridian. I fear that history will judge very harshly those who denied the science of climate change, and I just don't intend to be among them.
What do they say back to you?
You know, there is an ability for people who get elected to Congress to hold on to their dogmatic views. I encounter this on cannabis reform, on climate change. You know, I don't understand what Republicans have to gain from appearing like we're mean to gay people. I just those are issues where I think our party can evolve.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how your own role in things has evolved. You're a freshman congressman. I think that most people would be surprised the amount of time that you've spent on TV, the amount of media coverage you've gotten. But you seem to enjoy it.
Why do you say that, Isaac?
Because you spend a lot of time doing it.
I've spent a lot of time in my life doing things that I don't necessarily enjoy, but that I you think are necessary to
TV?
Achieve an outcome. This isn't summer camp. You don't pick the merit badges you want to earn. I mean, this is serious work, and I do believe the president's gotten a raw deal on Russia. I think I have an argument to make, and I'm willing to go make it. But, you know, I get asked that question a lot, and it somewhat irks me. This notion that because you do something that you must gain great joy out of it. No, it's my job. I was elected to be here to do this work, and I was put on a committee that has an oversight obligation over the Department of Justice.
Sure.
And I see problems there that are systemic and that make our republic vulnerable, and I want to make it better. I want to hold people accountable who I think violated our protocols and our laws, and then I want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
I guess I was thinking, for example, of there was one day a little while back, I think you were on the set at MSNBC and you tweeted, doing MSNBC to InfoWars today, the full spectrum, which is there's certainly not a lot of things that agree on MSNBC and Alex Jones.
I don't think I agree with either. So I don't know what that makes me.
It makes you somebody who does a lot of media. You don't enjoy it at all. You don't enjoy the spotlight.
I enjoyed the state legislature a great deal more because I had a more capability to impact outcomes that would impact people's quality of life. Here, the Congress moves too slow. Today, you know, we were honoring a member of Congress for her longstanding service, and we praised her for her leadership appropriately for fighting for the World War II Memorial. And we mentioned that it only took 16 years to get it done. So think about that. A good idea that everybody was for that took 16 years to get done.
The World War II Memorial, yeah, which is right.
Exactly.
Not the most controversial of things.
And it took 16 years. I am amazed at the slow pace of this place, and it is incredibly frustrating to me, and I enjoyed the state legislature more.
It seems like, though, you like get the Washington game, right? That part of the way that you are more effective or more of a factor than a freshman congressman would be is that you have turned yourself into this presence.
I want to impact outcomes. That's why voters sent me here. I'm not going to be able to impact outcomes by waiting 20 years to be a committee chairman because I don't have the patience for it. I do think that if you've got a compelling argument to make in this country, going on television, going online, being on social media, You've got a broader ability to be effective at communicating your message if you engage a wide span of platforms rather than just standing on the House floor in the middle of the night speaking to an empty room.
Last question here. You're running for re-election this year. Florida has a governor's race, a Senate race, a lot of hard-fought elections all over the country. Is this election going to be about anything other than Donald Trump?
No.
It seems like that's the motivating thing for everybody. It's
going to be about Donald Trump, but it's going to be people's view of Donald Trump in light of their economic conditions and their view of their economic future. I think that's what every election's about. Voting is a selfish act for most people. When I go vote, I vote for the people who I think will create a better country and who will improve my economic conditions by letting me prosper more. And I think that's how most Americans approach the ballot box. And look, if the economy continues to improve, I think we've got a chance to outperform expectations as Republicans in the 2018 election. And if it doesn't, we're going to get slaughtered.
The expectations are that it's going to be bad for Republicans because aside from the economy of how much President Trump has permeated things and what looks like, at least at this moment, not a lot of popularity. His approval rating in the 30s somewhere, right?
Well, you know, it is an advantage the Democrats have in this respect. People don't always go to vote for someone as much as they go to vote against someone. And Democrats will have a reason to show up and vote against the party of Trump. The Democrats don't have a standard bearer for us to identify and to provide some contrast with. I guess we'll be running against Nancy Pelosi. But then you see what the Democrat candidates do, right? Like Conor Lamb goes out and disavows Pelosi.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't work to run against him with Pelosi, right?
Yeah.
And that's
why I said I don't think that'll – I mean, my answer to your question was not that we should vilify Nancy Pelosi. I think what we need to do is make the case that with Donald Trump able to lead a unified Republican government, your economic conditions are going to get better, and you have a reason for more economic optimism for your business, for your family, and for your future. We either win that argument or we get crushed.
I think it's a good place to leave it. Congressman Matt Gaetz.
So glad we got to do this. It took too long.
It did. Thanks for taking the time.
All right.
Are you convinced? Let me know. Isaac@Politico.com. And make sure to follow me on Twitter @IsaacDobert and hit that subscribe button. Spread the word. Seth Meyers, Ricardo Roseo, Michael Tubbs, and many more coming soon. Thanks to Zach Stanton for producing, and catch you next time on Off Message.